Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
How are you this morning, Dr. Paul?
Doing fine, thank you. And
good.
We're ready and raring to go and solve all the problems of the world.
Indeed.
We'll start with St. Louis. That's
St.
just
Louis.
A little minor problem. We've been talking about justice in this country, you know, for quite a while, especially since Russiagate and a few other things. How do you, you go to the FBI, you report your complaint, you let them look into it, and they'll take care of it and get you justice.
No problem.
But what if the FBI is corrupt? What if the CIA is corrupt? What if our politicians are corrupt? Anyway, the riots out in St. Louis were pretty bad. It was pretty obvious who it was that was violating the non-aggression principle. You could see them on the streets, and they have videos of them. But they're the good guys. They're the army for the elected officials.
Yeah.
You know, the police are supposed to, you know, come out, and the mayors are on the rioters' side. And no wonder we have problems. And we'll have to sort this out if we think we're going to get things settled in any way whatsoever. But there is a case out there that really dramatizes how far we have drifted from the rule of law. And that's the McCloskeys. You know, they live in a nice neighborhood.
Yeah.
But the rioters, they said, we're not staying in the slums. We're going out into the suburbs. And they were in a gate around their house, nice home, and the rioters knocked it down. I didn't realize it at first. I thought they were maybe out on the street complaining. No, they broke it down and walked over their property. And guess what? The McCloskeys felt intimidated, and they both, had protection,
yeah,
legal protection, and they owned guns. And they went out there and showed that they had guns, and they left, and the house didn't get burned down or ransacked or anything else. And you think, well, why don't we call the police and arrest these people who came in here and marched over our property and threatened us? Oh, yeah, well, the police was called. They were called, and then guess what? The McCloskeys are in trouble.
Yeah.
They got charged with a felony, and here they have what they call a circuit attorney that issued this, sort of a circuit judge in St. Louis. And they've issued, the warrants for the arrest of the couple whose rights were violated. And now they're in big trouble. Hopefully, it will end better than it looks right now. Because I tell you what, that judge is very, very arrogant and determined and just is so pleased with herself. But her reputation isn't the greatest in the world. I mean, she's a stooge of George Soros. she was a state rep in 2016. She got a bunch of money. Most of her money came from Soros. And now she's up again for re-election. She's getting a lot of money from Soros again. So, and Soros's organization said that they do that. And what's the matter with that? Because we're for justice reform. reform. What we're trying to do is get rid of the impediments from the Constitution, and then we will have true justice in this country. But anyway, that's where it stands now, and I guess it'll take a while to sort it out. But there are some Republicans left in Missouri. There's hope that they can do something about it.
You know, it's an interesting case because they weren't even just having a gate around their house. They were in a gated community where all the streets were private property. There was a gate that clearly said, no trespassing, this is a private street. And they broke down the gate and then went onto that private property. So it wasn't like they were exercising their rights on a public street. And so certainly the McCloskeys did not look, they looked like they could use a couple courses in how to handle a gun, because they were not doing that great of a job, especially Mrs. McCloskey waving her pistol around. It's actually not funny, but sort of funny. But so then what happened is, as you say, very, very political. Gardner, I guess prosecutor essentially is what she is, she saw an opportunity to make political points. Now, this is the same woman who released a bunch of looters and protesters, people who actually did practice violence without charges. They're okay. But here's what she said about the couple. Make no mistake, we will not tolerate the use of force against those exercising their First Amendment rights, and we'll use the full power of Missouri law to hold people accountable. Well, how is it possible that when they were on private property, so if the McCloskeys wanted to protest, they could go into the house of this prosecutor and exercise their First Amendment. The First Amendment doesn't apply when you're on someone else's private property.
And we'd have to assume she probably went to law school.
Yeah,
if she did.
Maybe.
Wonder what the name of that law school is. Yeah. I mean, because she's just turned it on his head if you talk about private property and even the First Amendment rights. I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about First Amendment rights. Some people now have turned it around and saying, I can go any place, any time I want and do what I want, as long as I want to say something that is deserves to be heard. So that means they can march into your television stations, your newspapers, or in your church and just take over and say these things. That's a long way from First Amendment rights. The big thing is the First Amendment rights should always be dealt with thinking about property rights. And you mentioned the important thing right at the beginning. What kind of property was this? And this was definitely defined as private property, and the McCloskeys had a right to protect their property. But so far, the radical left are determined, and I keep thinking it's so far removed from common sense and sanity and traditions. How do they get away with it? But guess what? I think the infiltration of this Marxist radical philosophy is much deeper than I ever believed it could be. But they're there. They're in our universities. They're in our newspapers. They're in the media. They're in the movies. I mean, it's just really, really strong. At the same time, I'm still convinced there's an audience out there for the type of message we're talking about. You know, one where personal liberty is important and a rejection of violence. And, of course, that's if anybody's seeking peace and prosperity, that's what they have to accept. But right now, they're going to be around for a while, and there's going to be more confrontations the way I see it.
You know, our friend Jonathan Turley, who is, I think he's excellent on so many things, certainly on free speech, but he had a piece at the end of June where he took a look at this case, because right away that prosecutor, she said, I'm going to take these people out, I'm going to take them down. So he was taking a look at the case, and I urge people, JonathanTurley.org is his blog, and it's a good read always. But he makes a point. He says, I think like a defense attorney, so I have to say the optics are pretty bad in the situation. First of all, they're very wealthy, much more wealthy than most of the rest of us. They have guns that they're waving around. They seem to be arrogant. They're well-dressed. He said, for a jury, all of these things look pretty bad. But he said, when you look at the actual laws in Missouri, it's not so much a cut-and-dried case as you would imagine. Missouri has the Missouri Castle Doctrine Law, which says, subsection 3, as Turley points out, deadly force cannot be used unless such force, quote, such force is used against a person who unlawfully enters, remains after unlawfully entering, or attempts to unlawfully enter private property that is owned or leased by an individual. And that's where it gets tricky, because very clearly that was not only private property, but marked as such. So Turley at least thought in June, and we'll see what he says now, he thought that this is going to be a pretty tricky case for the prosecution.
Yeah, that's for sure. It will be, but it won't. It's going to last a while.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
You know, I wanted to bring up another thing dealing with coronavirus, and that has to do with the billions and billions of dollars being spent on developing a vaccine that, quite frankly, nobody knows if it's going to work, and there may be a lot of danger in it. But anyway, they're marching along, and even if somebody comes up with something in this cycle of looking for another vaccine, it's not going to be available. They're racing against time. There's going to be nobody sick anymore, you know, to really test it on. And the numbers, you know, are rigged all the time. There's more cases, but the condition of the situation of the country is not nearly as dire, and they haven't been able to demagogue it quite as easily. But the Oxford group, there was an Oxford study that just came out, and they have claiming now that they do have a vaccine. But they're admitting that there's still, you know, a few problems. They're suggesting, well, it might not be strong enough. And since money is not a concern, they decided that they will do testing because the results weren't quite as good as they wanted. They decided Let's give them two shots.
Yeah.
Let's give them two shots. And their statistics now show, well, there is a little bit of improvement if they get two shots. But now they're agitating for this, how to do it and when to do it. But there was one quote here that I wanted to read. The headline of it is, double shot COVID vaccine test raise new pandemic challenge. And that's to say the least, not the pandemic, the political, ethical problem. The people who are speaking for the people manufacturing the Oxford study group, we are actually really pleased we get a stronger immune response with two doses than we can with one. Then she goes on to say, we don't know what we're aiming at.
Oh, okay.
So, that's okay. You know, they're not perfect. We don't know how strong the immune response needs to be to protect people. And they're in a dilemma. This is one of the dilemmas they have, because they're worried that the one shot might work. Maybe they'll think it's going to work, but it really doesn't work. And they get a shot, and they're feeling good, and they have the shot, they're immune now, and they go back to work. And this is making them very, very nervous. So this is why this stuff is coming up that we won't know. We have to trace them for a good many months to make sure the double dose works. So this is just nuttiness and waste and danger, because they don't know what the results are. They're not even sure what they're doing. And how many complications could there be? There can be plenty. And the one thing they don't have to worry about is money. The money is going to be there, actually, to the trillions of dollars if necessary, whether it's directly related to the coronavirus and the lockdown. But the correction in the whole economy, just print, print, print. And it's not just that attitude in our government, our Congress, and our Federal Reserve. It's worldwide.
Yeah.
I mean, this has to be, I think, hundreds and hundreds of times bigger bubble that we're going through now than anything that ever existed in history. But for right now, my stocks are going up,
yeah.
And everything's going to be okay. But this thing raises a lot of questions. This double dose, I'm sure they're worried about whether it works or not. Just so, well, if one doesn't work, two will work. Thinking about the strategy of manufacturing and passing it out and giving it to people and watching these people and measuring, this is an unbelievable project which is not going to really solve the problem, because by next year the virus will probably change like cold viruses always do.
Well, the big question is, now that things appear to be changing, and even the second wave, and we'll talk about that later, fading out, what will it be next? They're not going to let things go back. They're absolutely not. And that suggests one of the things that will be next is that you have to get this vaccine or you can't go back to normal. You can't go to the store. All the things that they're preparing us with, the face mask mandate, is going to turn into a vaccine mandate. And there have been plenty of studies. Anyone can look at it. When you look at excess deaths in the U.S., for 2020 as compared to the average of the last 4 years, there just aren't a lot of excess deaths. Most of these excess deaths are caused, quote unquote, by COVID or attributed to COVID. And so you're seeing a basic flu season that they've grabbed onto as an excuse to push these totalitarian methods. And what's going to be next? It's going to be some things like this that are next.
Yeah, and the companies are lined up, but the big ones are there, and it's not a few million dollars here and there. Back in the old days, medicine did have a lot of great discoveries like insulin and penicillin and a few things, and it was usually not a boondoggle from the government and bailing out and financing, the companies that are favorites, the sort of the only crony capitalists. If you want to talk about crony capitalism, just look at the medical care system, and that is so bad. But there's something else that I wanted to bring up, because just on the virus, we've had some news that has been closer here. We have the Hidalgo County thing going on, and also the even our headlines in our little local paper here today said that it was interesting. The headline said, watch out, there's a lot of new cases, 150 new cases, and we have to be careful. And yet on the inside, it turns out that there was some good news there. It says, surge shows signs of ebbing in Texas.
Yeah.
But how many times have we concentrated on that? Or, you know, that's been expected. I mean, the good epidemiologists have been aware of this, that it does ebb, and this is the time of year it does. But that is not the one thing is what they don't want to ebb is the cash flow.
Yeah.
And the cash flow looks like it'll continue. And trillions of dollars mean nothing anymore. So I think it's the runaway inflation that they better know how to treat. That's going to be the big disease in this country, I'll tell you that.
Well, the cash flow and the control, that's what they like more than anything. And they do like it. And, you know, my kids went into Lowe's yesterday to pick something up. They didn't wear a mask, of course, but the store was empty. We had some Lowe's worker trotting behind them, yelling at them, hey, you're never going to be able to buy anything in this store. You don't have a mask on. You can't stay here, getting on their walkie-talkies. So they love this power. It's amazing because businesses used to treat their customers with respect, and now they don't at all. But you mentioned Hidalgo County, and I think we're talking about it because, of course, they say there's a great, huge spike in the valley, in the Southern Valley down there. I'm skeptical about that. I've seen some interesting statistics about, like we saw in Florida, 100% positives being reported in several different places down there. But something is interesting about this. And let's look at the first JPEG because, and I know this is hard to read, but Hidalgo County has told its population, if you or a household member test positive for COVID-19, you will put yourself under house arrest, or you will be put into a big arrest called jail. Here's what you have to do if you get a positive test. Remain at your residence for 14 days. No visitors allowed. Monitor yourself for symptoms. Make yourself available for government representatives to come check on you. Make a list of anyone you may have come in contact with. It will remain in effect, et cetera, et cetera. Failure to comply will give you prosecution. This is insane. It's absolutely insane, but it's spreading. It's spreading far and wide, and it's spreading through Texas, and it's pretty troubling.
Yes, and there was one article that had some blogging afterwards, one blog that I thought was interesting, how they're reacting, because this one is a mixed deal. This person says, I'm with you on all these things you just talked about. I understand that. Up to the point where you demand that people provide you with their blood. At quarantine? Sure, I get it. But if you barge into my home demanding my blood, we're going to have a problem. But well, I'd agree with him. But he's drawing the line in the sand way too late. Because once you roll over and you do every single thing they tell you to do, even if it has no medical benefits, drawing blood is a natural consequence. And, you know, the arrest and the things like that, house arrest and the limitation of activity, you are really are a prisoner. So I think the blood drop, well, that's better than nothing. But I think they're missing the point about authority and authoritarianism and government's controls. Because it's not like we, as a country and people around the world, have gotten through epidemics. You know, some have been very, very bad. And even some of the influenza epidemics have been bad, worse than what we've had here.
Yeah.
So this is something that people have to make a decision a little sooner. Is this a proper role for the government? And I'll say, what? Tell me which part of the Constitution I forgot to read.
Yeah.
When were they instructed to arbitrarily give authority for house arrest without charges? Just because, what does it want you to do? More distrust in the government, which they deserve, and then also to imprison people in their homes and wear ankle bracelets and all these kind of things. And its power, its control, its designed to have a special elite group telling us what to do with our lives. And unfortunately, there are too many of them. They're too aggressive. They're getting more aggressive. But I still remain optimistic enough to believe that the message of liberty is so compelling and so wonderful that I think if we, it should be such an embarrassment to us that we lose to those people that I'm looking at on television. Yeah. They're scoundrels, yeah, and they're lying, and it's incessant. So I think it'd be just really embarrassing for them to win this and for us to be subject to what is coming. But historically, it's happened quite frequently. Liberty does win out on occasion. We did in our early history. But many times, the dictators come along, and the people become lackadaisical. And once they give the responsibility to the government to take care of us, protect us from ourselves, and make sure that we're safe and secure, that's when the battle is lost, and that's been endorsed for a long time now, and that's the thing that has to be challenged. But what kind of words would they use to describe us if we started talking like that? We would not be very patriotic, and we would not be very, we'd be heartless in order to accept the notion that people should take care of themselves and look to their families. No, that's unacceptable.
Well, if people comply with this, what's coming, they deserve the tyranny that they're welcoming. You know, if the needle is too late. And they say, well, how much crazier can it get? If you read this stuff to people who don't obsessively watch the news, they don't believe you. And I have some family members who feel that way. Let's look at the next clip. How crazy can it get? Well, it can get a lot crazier. Broward County, Florida. They are listing, they're demanding that you wear a face mask in your own home. All persons who reside on any residential property, whether single family or multifamily, and irrespective of whether they own or rent the property, must ensure that all persons on the residential property, including guests, comply with all applicable guidelines of any Broward County emergency order, including the facial covering requirements. You're sitting at home watching TV, watching the news, getting spoon-fed your propaganda. You better have that mask on or you'll be in trouble. But I want to mention something, Dr. Wall, because I know this is an organization that's near and dear to your heart. But the American Association of Physicians and Surgeons, AAPS, the president of that organization, Dr. Chris Held, had a really fascinating post, the article that she wrote, and I saw it today. I think she wrote it today or yesterday. But it's really a remarkable piece because she looks back at what happened with COVID and what's happening. And she said that basically the statistics are completely useless. The current statistics betray the facts. Hospitalization numbers, death counts, case counts, they're all meaningless in the current form because they're all being manipulated by government officials and hospitals. But she pointed out something interesting, and we've touched on this a few times, and I think it's worth bringing up again. She said something happened between June 14th and 16th that brought about a bizarre new stage in the disease. And I brought up the Worldometer just so we could look at what she's talking about, if we could look at that next clip. If you look there at June 14th, all of a sudden, that's when you see this massive increase in new cases, right around the time they were focused on new cases. Here's something that may have happened. Here's something that did happen that may have affected that. The Council of State and Territorial Epidemiologists adopted a new definition of COVID cases in April. They were adopted by the CDC in May. The states were then urged to adopt these new definitions. The Texas Department of State Health Services adopted those new definitions on May 11th. And we've talked about the May 18th Collin County Commissioners meeting where Judge Chris Hill said, if we adopt these new definitions of COVID case, we are going to see a spike. This is in May, and that's indeed what happened. And here were the new definitions. Confirmed and probable cases were counted as COVID both. No tests necessary. You could have 17 COVID cases just from one positive result. And it's a COVID death. A COVID death is any death where COVID is confirmed or probable, automatic COVID death. And that got the numbers very high, and it got the totalitarians very excited. Unfortunately, our own governor bent and put in a mask order. Our own mayor did as well. But here's something else that she points out, and this is the last little part about her article, and it's a good read, and I'm going to try to put it up on our website if we can get permission from her. On July 17th, Health and Human Services, HHS, said $17 billion the COVID hotspots. Hospitals are eligible for $50,000 for each COVID admission into the hospital. And she is speculating. She said, I wonder if this had to do with the fact that the average COVID stay was 1.4 days, just long enough to count as an admission, and they get this fit between $50,000 and $70,000. All they had to do was admit a patient and get the money from HHS. So there's a lot of money in it for the hospitals, not the doctors who are overworked, and there's a lot of power in it for the politicians. This smells like a massive scandal to me.
Oh, it is, and it's going to be hard to get people to sort it out. But, you know, and we've talked about this, how can you overcome the falsehoods in their statistics they have because of the way they define the disease? But according to the chart you just showed, boy, the deaths should be doing this also. And they have gone up because they've changed the definition.
But only slightly. Yeah.
You know, they've changed the definition. And it hasn't done this. But there is more. But this is the definition, you know, makes a big difference. And that's what they have done. But the people don't realize the motivation behind that. You pointed out there's motivation, there's dollars behind that. Well, I thought hospitals and doctors, I think the individual doctor is not as involved as the as where medicine is corporate medicine now. You know, when you're working in corporate medicine, you're really not the doctor-patient relationship, because they really, you know, if you'd walk in the office or a relative walks into my office and you say, oh, well, you know, in the old days, it was just, you know, courtesy. But no, they really work hard not to have courtesy because it bothers their baseline. And that's what they do. The corporations have not done medicine much of a favor. But, you know, I do want to mention something about AAPS, because it is an organization that I've been strongly supportive of. And it's not just a Johnny come lately. I don't know the year, but I'd guess around 1946, because they saw what was coming, that the takeover of medicine by the government. And they've been absolutely consistent. They're Austrian economists, they're constitutionalists, and they're very, very dedicated. And instead of them fading away, actually they're putting out good material, and their magazines are good. And people, if they're interested in getting the medical perspective, it's American Associations of Physicians and Surgeons. And I'm sure they'll be glad to put you on their mailing list, because it's both medical and it's a medical ethics, you know, of it. So this is it's a great organization, and that's an organization that always gives me confidence that they're out there and there are people that are members. They know what they believe in. They're much more powerful than a zombie, you know, who never thinks of it. I said, well, I guess I can do this. And if that's what they want me to do, I'll do this. You know, that kind of stuff. They're very, very dedicated. And I think they have done a lot of good. We just need more organizations like that.
And you're a member too, right?
That's right. I started my medical career in 1968. Finally finished the military and my residency. That's when I moved to Texas. And that was first organization I joined as a practicing physician. And I remember joining as a lifetime member. And I made a decision even then. Somebody must have tipped me off. But even then, I didn't join the AMA. The AMA is part of the establishment system. So I did, and I'm still a member, and I've gotten their materials all this time. So it's a great organization.
Great. Well, that was a great article. And my closing is going to be very short. I haven't done this in a while, but I really want to urge everyone who's watching this show, whether you agree with everything we say or not, but to please subscribe to our channel. We're getting close to 250,000 subscribers, which is great for a show that delves into some difficult subjects. And so we're grateful to all of you for watching. We'd like you to be subscribed to our channel and also hit the notification bell so you'll be told when the show's about to start, so you can watch it live. We have a lively comment section. Maybe too lively sometimes, Dr. Paul, but we appreciate all of you. So please do subscribe to our channel and keep up with what's happening. And maybe you'll have a couple of tools you can use at the next debate with an MSM watcher. So
D- Daniel, that's a very good idea. I endorse that idea. I approve of that message. No, and I approve of our listeners and our viewers that come and seek out what we're trying to do and give us support. And if we felt totally depressed over it, like we were just wasting all our time, we wouldn't do it. But we don't feel that way because we're convinced that ideas have consequences, and an idea whose time has come can't be stopped. Right now, they've slowed us up a little maybe over the many decades now. But the ideas are still out there. I do believe in both the spiritual remnant as well as an economic, philosophic, political remnant. People hang on to the truth. Even when they burn books, which they're going back to already, you can't burn all the books and you can't burn the ideas. And that's what we're in the business of, is trying to promote ideas. And quite frankly, I am very pleased with the consequence of some of the things that I've tried to do over the last several decades. And very often I'd be asked, what should I do now? I said, I understand what you're talking about, but tell me exactly what I'm supposed to do. I said, you know, just do whatever you want to do, whatever you can. Do because everybody's different. But the one thing I do believe strongly in is if you come to a conclusion that this philosophy is on the right track and can contribute to a real resurgence of the belief in liberty, you have to do something. You know, I'll tell you what, it's helpful. It's something you're doing in a positive way, but it will help you as well, because if you feel good about what you're doing, you don't have to lie awake enough and say, oh, why did I support that? Politicians in Washington, I don't know, quite frankly, how they sleep very well at night, especially when they promote war and warfare and welfare and deficits and all the building of a calamity that we're facing today. And this calamity can be dealt with. It can be reversed, but it has to be reversed with people believing in the proper ideas. And that, to me, is the idea of liberty and the rejection of the use of violence to have our own way. More and more are joining us in this effort, and I thank you very much for being with us on those terms. And please come back and visit with us soon.